time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
This is Texas Tech. Your last coach you fired is 7-0 in the NFL.
Pete Thimmel.
Bring the pitchforks to Shebeckler Hall. That's way more fun.
I'm telling you.
With SI's Pat Forty.
There's not many places that have a 100,000-seat stadium and perspective.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Got some good games this weekend, gentlemen. Well, Michigan, Michigan State, clash of the top tens. We have the cocktail party, arbiter of how things are going in those two programs. Ole Miss is at Auburn. Pretty interesting. Auburn, no matter whether Auburn wins or loses, they just are always ranked 18th. I think Penn State at Ohio State. See if Penn State can score, gain 3 yards. There's a lot going on.
When do you start groveling for tailgate food in East Lansing?
Who, me? I can hook that place up. East Lansing, no problem.
Dan Wetzel's attending a college football game.
How about
this?
That?
Is a big deal.
Listenership.
It's a big deal.
If you're going to be at Spartan Stadium, you can join me. We'll lay out rose petals in Dan's path from his parking spot to the press elevator.
It's in his Yahoo contract. He gets to chopper to all games in East Lansing. So
I wish. It would be appropriate and appreciated, but that is not going to happen. I will be sitting in traffic with the rest of the people.
You may have to leave now to get there, actually.
Yeah. Noon game. Noon games are tough. Noon games are tough.
Oh.
Tough on the traffic.
You got to be like 7 a.m. in the car, right?
Well, I know who will be there for sure is Jim Harbaugh.
Correct.
And look, Harbaugh won 2 games last year, went 2-4, lost to Michigan State as a, I don't know what they were, 20-something point favorite, a huge favorite. They just didn't even play Ohio State due to COVID, and that was probably a relief in the long run. Had his salary cut, was pretty shook up his entire staff, was pretty much on the way out. And for all the criticism, you got to give them all the credit in the world. They're 7-0 and rolling along pretty well heading into this game. Michigan State team that is also 7-0 that nobody saw coming. Over under wins were 4.5. Mel Tucker's second year is rolling. But to get to Michigan, I mean, I think Michigan State's just playing with house money at this point. Certainly possible they could win the Big Ten in this final month of what's going to be, you know, Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, and perhaps Penn State. We'll see. Without Sean Clifford, they really aren't any good. We'll get to some Penn State. But for Harbaugh, I think what's interesting here is, like, this season has undoubtedly been a success so far. All the, can he win the non-conference? Well, Washington, they cooked him. Washington wasn't that good. They went on the road to beat Wisconsin. They went on the road and won a classic game against Nebraska. They've pounded some teams they were supposed to pound. They survived an upset, a scare from Rutgers. Everything's rolling along. Does he have to win this game? I think it's fair to say they're going to be significant underdogs against Ohio State, and they probably can't beat them. But does he have to beat Michigan State and Penn State? And I know 11-1 or 12-0 is a high bar, but this is the Michigan job. I'm not saying he's going to get fired because he isn't. But how important is this game, not going down 0-2 to Mel Tucker, continuing to set up that big game at the end of the year with Ohio State, because I think if they get by Michigan State, it's right there. How important is this game for Jim Harbaugh, who has already answered every important call this season? Pat?
Oh, I think it's
before
important.
Before Pat goes, Dan, I'm just impressed that you haven't already ditched the podcast because you cashed your ticket for Michigan over this year, because you were on that. And we gave you a bunch of flack for it. What was it? Was it 7?
No. It was 7.
7.
Okay. So it you got to get one more.
All right.
I need one more, but I was on that.
Yeah.
That was an easy one. Because
we don't give you many compliments on this show, so that's a compliment. You were all over
I got
that.
A lot of heat for that one. I got scoffed at.
I mean, in fairness, we scoff at you a lot. So
somebody went 6-0 last week. Nobody else did.
All right. Go ahead, Pat. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to bring it up before Dan did, basically.
Here's the thing about Michigan. This is Jim Harbaugh's record at Michigan. This all carry an L against Ohio State. But 10-3, 10-3, 8-5, 10-3, 9-4. Now they're 2-4 and then 7-0. Other than last year, they are pretty good. Whatever the hell that means, I don't know. You could also look and say they're third, fourth, third in the East. They tied for first in the East once. You know, I don't know. He's a hard coach to figure out, and it's a hard program to figure out. Like, what the hell is good at Michigan?
No, I mean, it's a pretty fascinating conundrum, and I think you look and say, all right, he's done way better than his two predecessors, Brady Hoke and Rich Rodriguez. He, you know, that's a program that wants to be in that double-digit wins, up to 12 wins, maybe up to 13 wins, win the Big Ten. That's always been a big thing there, you know, compete for a national championship, and he has not done that. You know, it's like for a while there, it's like everything plateaued on that 4th-and-1 spot in 2016 against Ohio State. Spot goes Ohio State's way. Ohio State continues on, you know, goes to the playoff. Urban Meyer's mastery of Michigan continues unabated, and Harbaugh's program stagnates at that point. Now this is a reboot this year, okay? Reshaped his staff, younger staff, really helped him, I think. By all accounts, energized and engaged. So you're 7-0, and yes, you've checked all the boxes you have to check. But to your point, Dan, to answer your question, big game, I think, for them to continue the momentum, to make everyone believe, okay, you know, we have taken a step back. We're back on the way up. We have stopped stagnating and then last year declining. Now we're going back up. And maybe we're not going to be quite good enough to beat Ohio State. And that really sticks in the craw of Michigan people. But if you get to Ohio State 11-0 and you have that big game in the big house and you at least, you know, stay on the field, you don't get blown off of it as you have been several times recently by the Buckeyes, I think everybody's pretty energized about where the program is. But you got to beat Michigan State first. I used your exact phrase on Big Ten Network today. Michigan State is playing with house money. Mel Tucker's playing with house money. They've wildly overachieved. You know, this was not expected from them by any stretch. And so, you know, you give them credit. Sure, they very much want to beat Michigan because that's their, you know, that's their biggest rival game. But at the same time, if you don't beat Michigan, nobody's going to say, oh, Mel Tucker can't do it. Oh, the program's no good. I mean, everybody's pretty energized about where they're headed right now. So if you ask me who needs it more, Jim Harbaugh and Michigan needs it more.
I would agree with that. And right now for Michigan, when you look at Harbaugh and Harbaugh's future, because look, they should, I mean, they're 4.5-point favorites at Michigan State. They should beat sort of an Indiana team that is feeling the force of gravity come crashing down upon their program. At Penn State, certainly doesn't look that intimidating right now, considering that the mighty Illini went in there and Penn State couldn't pee a drop, as they say, on offense. At Maryland, certainly doesn't look intimidating anymore. They are in the middle of a quintessential Mike Loxley free fall. Ohio State's Ohio State. So I think this about Michigan right now. I give the administration their credit for bringing Harbaugh back to a market contract. I don't have any sort of delusions that they can beat Ohio State on the field this year. I think Ohio State's the best team in the Big Ten. I think they've separated themselves from the Big Ten. And this season may be even indicative more of how far that separation is. That said, I think that one thing Harbaugh has done this year is he has sort of rallied the administrative base. He worked with Ward Manuel for these hires. Ward Manuel's had a big hand in this staff overhaul. So even if they lose to Michigan State and they get walloped again by Ohio State and maybe drop another, I don't think Harbaugh's in any danger. I don't think Michigan institutionally is Auburn or is one of these places that says we need a league title or bust. I think Michigan is going to be just fine. And they have shown this time and time again. They have accepted a program that's good enough to come in second place. And, you know, all is Michigan. There's been no issues off the field, right? I mean, none that I can think of any kind of prominence. And Jim Harbaugh has done a good job coaching Michigan. He just hasn't done a good enough job to come close, other than the 4th-and-1, since the 4th-and-1 especially, to winning the Big Ten title. It seems like they hit a ceiling, they've reverted down, and now, you know, it's again the same gravity that is forcing Indiana down. Well, Michigan's rising because they're Michigan. Michigan is doing this with a team that I don't really think is all that talented. I think they have two elite players on defense, and they're pretty average after Dax Hill and Aiden Hutchins. Aiden Hutchins, he should be in the Heisman. I mean, he's one of the five best players in college football, period, this season. The fact that he hasn't gotten more publicity, I don't know if that's our fault or that's Michigan's fault, but he is a game wrecker. I mean, he is not quite Chase Young, but he's in that same sort of atmosphere as him. And I give Mike McDonald a lot of credit. He should be the defensive coordinator. He should be in the Broyles conversation. Now, I don't know if that was because Michigan's defense got so sideways under Don Brown and just became so one-dimensional in what they did that he's just come in and kind of given them a little diversity and allowed them to just have some general success by, I don't think he's like reimagined defensive football. In other words, I think he's come in and just been like a pretty steady hand and really used the two chess pieces he has really in a striking fashion. So look, Michigan is good. They've had blips and they've had little moments of, but any notion of like, a free fall here and Harbaugh loses his job, I don't see it. Don't underestimate the ego of the administration in helping. They feel like they're a part of the staff now, too. When you look at Ward Manuel and his crew there, like that's a powerful thing. And at the end of the day, and this is probably one of the reasons why he's still there, nobody at Michigan wants to be part of firing Jim Harbaugh. Like that's a big deal. That's hard to do. That's like Florida firing Tim Tebow or something like that. You know, it's like when BYU brought in Ty Detmer as an offense coordinator, it was a disaster. That's a hard divorce now. You know, like that is, it's different when your coach is your, you know, legendary player. So he is not the best quarterback in Michigan history. I want to be very clear about that, but he's definitely at the top of that second tier. So it's been fascinating. I mean, look, say this about Harbaugh. It's never been boring, ever.
You know, he's not the most popular former player. He's not a guy who's like buddies with everybody or anything like that, but he's definitely a Michigan guy. The thing with Michigan is the disconnect with Michigan is not in administration or even a large portion of the fan base that has unrealistic expectations, right? Some don't, but that's always the case. But the administration doesn't have unrealistic expectations, and they listen to what I consider the more reasonable fans, not wild ones that are constantly like, we need to fire this coach and win. We must win. We must be national champs. The disconnect is in the branding, which they've done to make them out to be one of the greatest programs, always a national contender and all this stuff, the folklore doesn't match the reality. But if you look at Michigan, Bo Schembechler never won a national title. They split a title under Lloyd Carr. That's it. I mean, we're talking 50, 60 years here. This is not a team that's got this string of even Notre Dame, as much as it's about folklore, like they did win. They won in 88 and they won it with Joe Montana. Like, Michigan never did. They won the one title. They had one title they split with Nebraska. They were what they are. What they are is a really good program. They win a lot of games. They certainly think they do things the right way. They graduate a lot of guys. They have an incredible stadium. It's a great game day atmosphere. It's a fun place to go. It draws in students from around the country. Like everything Michigan wants out of its football program, it delivers, except that elite, elite victory. And they want that. But they'd rather accept this than be one of these programs, Sully, who's chasing his tail around.
We're talking about Big Ten football here. What the hell? Like what?
We're talking about programs that last won titles in, say, the late 90s.
Yeah, but I don't know. No, I mean, I don't know what you should be. I don't know which one's the right one. But there is a sense with a lot of Michigan fans, it's like, Ohio State, we really, really want to beat Ohio State one of these days. I mean, they really do, but it's not like they were never willing to do everything that Ohio State was willing to do to win that. And I'm not doing this white hat, black hat thing, but there are shades of gray. There is a level of effort. Michigan's just like, we're really good in everything. Like they got a top 10 basketball team. They got the number one hockey team. They'll win a field hockey or a softball. Now they're good at everything at Michigan, and they care about like their hospital and crap. Like this is the stuff Michigan fans care about. Now, is there an element that's like, we got to beat Ohio State? Yeah, sure. But they're kind of looking like, well, what's reasonable? Do they want better? Yes, but they're not willing to storm the Schembechler Hall with pitchforks and torches. Just because, so if Jim Harbaugh goes 10-2 or 9-3, he's fine. If he can go 11-1, yeah, he's going to keep being the coach there. And can they improve? You know, there's a really good junior quarterback in Detroit, Dante Moore, out of Martin Luther King High School. And if Michigan can get him, He's not as highly, he's not, he doesn't have the hype of Arch Manning. Man, this kid can play. And they got a really good shot. Like, can they get him and keep that momentum going? They've got young quarterbacks. They'll stick with them. And I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an important distinction that both you and Pete have made. And I add my voice to it, that Michigan wants to be good. Michigan is not desperate to win all every game, you know. And for all the reasons you guys mentioned, and also throw in the fact that probably a top five state university in the nation academically. And there's a little bit of arrogance that goes with Michigan's stature.
Oh, they'll tell you number one. They'll tell you number one. There's no top five on that.
You just want to hear about them. No fun.
We're talking about hospitals and U.S. News and World Report rankings. Bring the pitchforks to Shebeckler Hall. That's way more fun. I'm telling you.
That's what I'm talking about, Pete.
It ain't me. Have a riot.
You got to listen to these people.
We're talking about the poetry department next.
They will.
Come on.
They care. They care about it. It's crazy.
I'll be like, really? Presidents that went there, Gerald Ford.
I know hardcore Michigan fans will be like, well, we won that softball title. Like, two. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
They don't have a Bobby Lauder fringe there to contingent, that's just going to go in and say, no, we're making changes because we can't stand not being champions. You know, that element, if it exists, it's not a powerful element, all right? It's been sublimated.
Yeah. They're Bobby Lauder, Stephen Ross, and Stephen Ross does own his own team, so he doesn't need to do it to Michigan.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very good point.
Stephen Ross is their guy. You know what Stephen Ross is spending his money on? He's going to build an entire graduate school in the city of Detroit for the University of Michigan. Like, that's what he's going to spend like $500 million on, not, you know what? So...
He owns the Dolphins, by the way. Our listeners may not know that. He's the Dolphins owner. Yes. He's about
the Ross School of Business and the Ross this and the Ross that. And yeah, I don't know. It is what it is, man. There's not this element that's like, how about I win this game? We're firing him. We will deal. I mean, we'll talk about Texas Tech. They fired a guy with a 5-3 this year. They just got fired at Texas Tech, right? I mean, the rest of the sport is nuts. These guys have like a little smidge of like reasonability that's like so weird. You're like, this, that can't be real, is it? You guys actually like care about this?
There's not many places that have 100,000 seat stadium and perspective. And I think you could say Michigan more or less has both.
I don't know. I think they need to win this weekend.
Sure. Well, let's get back to the original point. Be a hell of a lot better for them if they win than they lose this one.
Sure would help. It's pretty, you know, you can only ride that, hey, we beat Wisconsin for so long.
Yeah. I'd be curious how good they are, like, to really dial in on their roster, like, next year. Now, I give them credit, like, they've been better than I thought this year, and I just wonder when some of that high-end talent goes, if this is some of those, there were a couple of recruiting classes where Don Brown was just taking, like, the 8th best player in Connecticut at that position, and we've certainly written about this. They were like the mockery in the recruiting circles there for a while. And that stuff you don't feel right away. That's the stuff you all of a sudden start to feel when you've got guys running down on punt team that should be at UConn. And that's when it could catch up to them. And I don't know they're too deep well enough or know what they have. Now, again, you get a little success, you can start getting elite guys from the portal. And maybe a little momentum can go a long way in college football when you got a cool looking helmet.
Their last few recruiting classes ranked 11th, 11th, 10th, 24th. It would be their seniors right now. Sounds about right. It's like, good. They're good. That ain't going to beat you, Ohio State. Not going to get it done.
Right.
But it's going to win you a lot of games.
Yeah. And, those are similar to the rankings where when the Brian Kelly was having at Notre Dame when they went into the 2018 playoff. You know, and they're good enough to go 12-0 against a pretty good schedule, but then you run up against Clemson and Trevor Lawrence and those guys, and it's like, no longer good enough.
Michigan's also one of those places, too, where the 3 stars become 4 when they commit to Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
If they commit to Indiana, they're not. So, again, not on rivals, because our rivals guys don't do that.
Well, I only look at rivals. That's why I don't do 24-7. That thing's it's a trick. I say this every time, but in 24-7... And they have scouts who do a good job, but their system, you can have, if everyone rates you a 4 star, you become a 5 star. Like if everyone rates, like you go up because the way the averages work. And it's the worst because it puts undue. If you're a four star, you're a four star. It's like if every team was going to draft you in the second round, it doesn't make you a first round pick. But then like, these guys come in and they're like, hey, it's a five star. It's like, nah, he's not a five star. He's a bunch. Everyone agreed. I don't know. Maybe there's a little of that, but Michigan, we'll see. We'll see what they do this weekend. Let's get to another Big Ten. Sean Clifford, according to James Franklin, will be 100% this weekend. We saw him some spot duty against Illinois. Without him, this is not a good team. With them, perhaps, we will see. I don't know what they can handle Ohio State at the horseshoe. But they need it. And it's a man, welcome back. If you're 99%, that's a tough go against that Buckeyes. The interesting thing to me about Penn State this week, and look, we're gonna pick all these games later in the week in the race for the case, is word breaks that on Monday that James Franklin gets a new agent, Jimmy Sexton of CAA, the power agent. Boy, that's not really a good time for that news to break for old James Franklin.
Yeah, after laying a dinosaur egg at home against Illinois.
It did happen a while ago, but he said that today, and that's actually it. That happened weeks ago. So I can't disagree that
not
the
good to break.
Bad,
that's all I said.
Yeah, it's not like a new revelation.
It is to the fans who.
Yeah, no one.
I mean, if I'm a Penn State fan, like, so all the jobs open and all of a sudden you get the new agent. So what are we doing? Are we talking about next year's job? Why are you getting an agent? It's not you're focused on this. 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. That's what he always tweets out. Since you got the agent, you lost to Iowa and you lost to Illinois. Couldn't design, you know, I mean, that's you're getting paid this much money and this much expectation. That's it. Are you focused or are you not? And that's not a great look for James Franklin. Coach that could use a victory this weekend, put James Franklin pretty high up on that list.
That's for sure. Yes, but also I think very low on the probability, you know. But yeah, that's look, Audrey Snyder from The Athletic, praise her, credit where due. She wrote a very good kind of analysis of where Penn State is this week after that loss and said, you know, so the problems that this team has have been problems that James Franklin's teams have had kind of repeatedly. Offensive line play, where they have really never been that good. You lose one game and it snowballs into two, which always goes against Franklin's thing of, I am only focused on one game. Well, then how come you keep losing a game after that game? You know, and that the school has given him everything he's asked for in terms of support staff, facilities, fundraising, everything. And here they are. With two losses and you're staring at three really difficult games to go. And if you go 7-5 with this team, it makes it look like last year's big disappointment was less of a COVID mulligan than maybe it was panned off as being. So they sure as heck better at least show up against Ohio State. Their defense is good. They obviously missed PJ Mustafa, who got injured a couple of weeks ago. I mean, but when even so what? You should never have Illinois run for 357 yards in your stadium against you. That's embarrassing. Scoring 10 points in regulation against Illinois is embarrassing. Not being able to get 3 yards over and over and over and over again in overtime is embarrassing. That was a really bad loss, and it does put in stark relief, like Franklin's name being bandied about for both USC and LSU. And there's some Penn State fans that I know I've talked to, like, yeah, if he wants to go, let him. If he stays, okay. But it's not like we're going to sit here and cry because James Franklin may be walking out. So if he's planning on, you know, the Jimmy Sexton stick up, you know, give me $8 million or I walk, I don't think there'll be a lot of people that would be in favor of giving him $8 million.
Yeah, it's an interesting crossroads for James. It almost seems like it would be a good time for him to go. You know, like he's done that place pretty well. He has an unbelievable recruiting class coming. He has the number one quarterback, depending on who you talk to, coming in. They got another very good quarterback in the next class behind there. They've got a ton of high-end guys coming. So it's hard to say the future is dark because the future is as bright, you know, other than Saquon. I mean, they have as good of like crew of recruits coming in as they've had. That said, it just sometimes for these coaches, it's what was it, Larry Brown's five and drive. It's hard to get past like seven in college football because he can go to one of these new places and he's gonna have the new car sent again. So he's had some excellent years at Penn State, and he's had some underwhelming years at Penn State. And this one for James and his long-term future is trending towards underwhelming at the wrong time. In the wake of sort of a year that was cast aside as a bit of a COVID hiccup. Now, that said, like, that Auburn win's still a pretty good win. That I think
18th you know, ranked the, Tigers beat that 18th ranked Tigers
perpetually tattoo it on them. And I just think that Ohio State is playing really well right now, and I think a little underappreciated in how the level that they are playing compared to the last time we saw them in the big picture, which was against Oregon. And so I really think the big game for James is going to be Michigan going there, because that series history, Penn State has really stomped Michigan in State College. And so I think that's, and James is a little batty today too. He said we're focused on Illinois twice when he was talking about Ohio State.
Yeah.
And then instead of saying we're going to the horseshoe, he said we're going to the big house. Like, again, we all misspeak and everything, but that just seemed like an odd time for, I'm not going to read too much into that, but it just seemed odd that it was.
We all drink at work.
People have listened to this podcast and said they sound a little batty today. So, yeah.
I never misspeak, and I have great pronunciation of everything.
Don't play our post NFL draft podcast if you want any empirical evidence for that.
Oh my, yeah,
might have been an HR violation or two. I don't know. I can't prove it at this point. No, I mean that's going to be a big game. He's another one that's kind of, you're just stuck with this behind Ohio State, and it's like, what are you going to do? I do remember Billy Tubbs, the great Billy Tubbs, basketball coach at many places because of this quote, one of his many quotes. It's a philosopher, really, with Billy Tubbs. And he remember him saying, don't stay anywhere more than 7 years. After 7 years, you make no more friends. You only make enemies. James Franklin's in year eight, so might be. I don't know. You don't hire Jimmy Sexton if you're just not focused on this whole thing at all. Like, what?
Yeah.
Jobs open. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. It means Sexton.
Right.
How about Mike Tomlin's denouncing of USC today? That was like,
don't insult
that's
me.
How you shut one down.
Did that report come from? That was a terrible report.
Carson Palmer.
I mean, come on. If you know
the
if
only
you know
worst
Mike
one
Tomlin,
was the Jeff the only worst one was Jeff Fisher to USC.
Oh, that
like,
was
like, my God, they'd hire the three of us as the OC, DC, and special teams coordinator before they'd hire Jeff Fisher as the head coach.
I'm first talking the other way.
To go 8-8.
The other way.
That's a good line, Sully.
That is good. They would want Mike Tomlin. Any college would be lucky to have Mike Tomlin. You know anything about Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers, I was like, what? Why don't you just throw Belichick out there? Like... the Steelers don't change. It's just, I remember I saw that thing I was like, oh my, forget it, whatever. So absolutely no way. First off, even if he was even if he somehow didn't want to coach the Steelers anymore, it's like 20 NFL teams would immediately grab him as fast
absolutely.
As they could.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Look at some of these dunderheads who are NFL coaches right now. Like, it's unbelievable. You don't think somebody would want Mike Tomlin?
Does the name Vic Fangio come to mind? There?
That was, I saw that thing. I was like, that was one of the worst reports. I was like, okay. So Carson Palmer. Okay.
Well, it was, back-to-back days. We got Mike Tomlin and then, yes, the Jeff Fisher one.
Fisher being like, put my name out
well,
there.
Well, of course.
It. Mike Tomlin.
But Jeff Fisher one was like somebody had a tweet stuck in drafts from 2015 and accidentally hit send on it or something. It's like, I mean, he hadn't been a candidate for anything. Come on.
No.
He's never going to be a candidate.
No.
He's not a college football coach.
Yeah, he begged for the Vanderbilt job last year. For it.
One job that's open, let's deal with this quickly, is Matt Wells fired at Texas Tech after 2+ years. He's 13-17 overall. He's 5-3 this year. They lost and blew a game at Kansas State, but and they have. I saw in the, I think it was the AP story, like, well, why'd you fire him now? And it was sort of the theory was, well, they have their tough games coming up. Well, why don't we see if they win them? I don't, unless there's something else to this. Like, they got Iowa. No. They have an. They have Oklahoma,
there's not anything
Iowa
else to
State.
It. They just didn't like him. I mean, he just wasn't one of them, and he was not embraced from the moment he got there. And, you know, he tried to adjust. He hired Sonny Cumbie. He kind of did what they want. But that, yeah. And the reason they fired him now is very simple. Because if he beats Oklahoma, it'd be really hard to fire him. Because in Oklahoma kind of stinks.
But
and
if he beats Oklahoma,
theoretically, Texas
he might be having a pretty good season. Right. Lo and behold. And
so they could.
This to me was terrible by the administration. They screwed their players. They absolutely screwed. You got a team. You sign up to be on the team. You want to play the season. You're 5-3, and you're all excited. We got Oklahoma. We got Iowa State. Let's go. Yeah, we lost last week. Like I'm on a team, and you just sit there and say, we don't care about you, and we don't care about your team. We're just going to fire your coach. And there's no reason not to give him that opportunity and fire him at the end of the year. But you didn't just screw him. What about the kids of the team?
Absolutely.
And it's this Texas Tech. Your last coach you fired is 7-0 in the NFL. Like, it's a hard job, man. You had Patrick Mahomes and you didn't win. You had Patrick Mahomes and a coach who's 7-0 in the NFL and you couldn't win. It's a tough place. And I just think you screwed your players like that. Bad on the Texas Tech administration. This is why, as much as you can laugh at Michigan, like there's at least they wouldn't do this to their guys.
No, absolutely not. And that's the message to the players is truly, we really do not care about you or this season at all, because we're going to pull the plug now because we're afraid you may win games. And then we're going to have to keep a guy. Oh, boy. So we're going to make the definitive decision after 30 games and in the middle of a year when we have a winning record. And, yes, I know that Texas Tech's one of those schools that the non-conference schedule is always bad. And so you puff it up with some wins there. But still, 5-3, and at least give them a chance. Third season, you might want to see exactly what they can put together against the best teams in the league. And boy, to your point, Dan, I mean, I did something in the dash on toughest jobs, and you could really argue a lot of it, but I think Texas Tech is absolutely one of the hardest jobs in the Power Five. And, you know, maybe you can get Sonny Dykes or Jeff Traylor, or doing good work at SMU and UTSA respectively, but there's got to be a lot of coaches out there saying, why would I want to go to that place if they're going to pull the trigger on you 30 games into your tenure and not even let you try to win some big games?
Bad look on that one. All right, cocktail party. Let's get to this quickly. Obviously, Georgia is rolling.
Presented by Dos Equis, by the way, and we can't call it the cocktail party.
What?
The cocktail party is wait, hold on. What?
We can't call it
Dos Equis?
So who says?
So Georgia tweeted it out. That it's presented by Dos Equis, but people are, people poo-poo on the whole, the booze connection. But
so wait. Georgia can say it has a beer deal, but the players can't.
Yeah, right.
Right? Players, mm-hmm. And it's not mm-hmm. a cocktail party. Okay. All right, yeah. The drunken disaster that's about to hit Jacksonville. You never seen is. So many drunk people wearing sweaters tied around their neck.
It's more of a George crowd, man, in Jacksonville for this one.
Well, the Georgia people.
Driving out of there.
Jean shorts meet the sweaters.
I was driving out of the cocktail party one year, and, you know, it's usually a day game. It's always a day game. So it's evening, and a woman flashed me from the back of her minivan. That's a true
from
story.
The back of a minivan. Oh, my. Yes.
All right, Pete.
I really didn't know what to do. I was like,
Florida plates or Georgia plates on that thing?
Memory's a little hazy because it was a while ago, but
I don't think you're looking at the license plate at that moment. All right. Anyway, Georgia is obviously needs this to continue to climb on. They could probably lose this game, still reach the playoff. A lot ahead of them. They're rolling along. Bigger game to me is for Florida. Gators are 4-3. They're 2-3 in the league. They're 4 wins. They have not beaten anyone. No offense to Tennessee, Sully. Sully, Tennessee is their someone. But other than that, no one. I'll give them the someone. Dan Mullen says both Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson will play on Saturday. We do not know how much. George is going to have a talent advantage. I think that's probably the most distressing part of the Dan Mullen time in Florida. He's recruited good. But why wouldn't you be able to? You're Florida, and it's not like Miami and Florida State are doing anything. Usually those three programs just pass the baton of like dominance around. And then there's unbelievable scandal that follows. It's pretty classic with those two. It's like a fucking merry-go-round, right? Now none of them are any good. How much does Dan Mullen need this win? I know he's not like gonna lose his job or anything, but and the probability scale is, you know, it's a little better than James Franklin, but not maybe a whole lot. Pat, your thoughts on Dan Mullen?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation where like last year, I think everybody was like, wow, see, look what a great job, what a great hire Dan Mullen was. You know, when you take Kyle Trask and you have Kyle Pitts and you have this really explosive, talented team and you push Alabama in the SEC championship game. First of all, you pound Georgia in the cocktail party and then you push Alabama in the championship game. And boy, oh boy, is it the SEC, you know, when things swing this dramatically. And now, you know, the big thing was you lose to Kentucky, then you follow that up and lose to an LSU team that's getting rid of its coach. People swing in a hurry. And now, you know, they can't believe Todd Grantham is still the defensive coordinator. And they can't believe that Dan Mullen can't figure out his quarterbacks. And, you know, this is life in the SEC. As you said, look, Scott Strickland's a pretty level-headed guy. He's not sitting there saying, you know, you have to win this game or you're in trouble or anything like that, especially when the rest of the schedule looks very manageable. But it will be uncomfortable to be Dan Mullen if you get smoked by Georgia and you've got at least four losses at the end of this year. So, you know, that again, that comes with the big salary. That comes with the big job. That's the way it is.
Yeah, I think sort of the reports of Mullen's demise have been, I think, greatly exaggerated here. I saw people like putting him on the hot seat this week and I like laughed out loud. I mean, that's just, yeah, it's just ridiculous. He is in a bad stretch. There is no doubt they have not recruited at the elite level there. But like, I think when you take a look at the composite work at Florida, he's 33-12, Peach Bowl, Orange Bowl, Cotton Bowl. Look, it's not Urban Meyer, and that's the standard he helped create, quite frankly. He was the play caller on both of those national championship teams under Meyer. But I kind of like saw this U-turn and I was like, okay. I mean, they were a disaster at Kentucky. There's no other way to say it. They had, 15 penalties? And the LSU loss was not great. But I think, I don't know, especially when you look at Richardson and see what the future can be. Sure, it's uncomfortable for Mullen. And you do wonder, he's someone who has had a little bit of an eye on the NFL. The NFL has had a little bit of an eye on him. I don't think, like, at this moment in time, that's imminent. But I say this, if you're USC and you look at your list, right? I don't know. Like maybe you start to get a little bit of a wandering eye because, you know, the natives are a little bit restless there. I don't know. But I think there's a lot of good in Dan Mullen, a lot of good in the work that he has done there. And I think, in my opinion, this is more of a blip than it is sort of some sort of downward spiral trend for Florida.
Could use a win. All right. Story that was most sent to us, I believe, this week. Well, maybe this may come a weekly category. I don't know. I just like it that people read this and think of us immediately. Group of high school students in Massachusetts had to ride on a party bus complete with a stripper pole and neon lights during a recent field trip. I believe the field trip was the Foxy Lady in Providence. I don't know. It's an experience their teacher said highlights problems with the education system. What? There's no problem. Jim Mayer's an 11th grade advanced placement language and composition teacher at the Brook Charter School in Boston said the original bus had fallen through. Quote, it's a funny story, but it's actually a real bus shortage. Speaks to major flaws in our education system. Oh, lighten up, Jim. I would have taken the field trips a lot more seriously if there was a stripper pole and neon lights on the way there.
I know this. Your dad would have been running to chaperone those two now.
Oh, hell yeah. Every dad at the school is lined up for next trip.
I don't want the aquarium. Nope. Lexington and Concord. Nope.
Providence.
Let's go to
Providence. Sign me up on sign up, genius. Yeah.
That beats old Sturbridge Village, I'll tell you that.
Anyway, it was they didn't have a school bus. They went with the next best thing. The party bus isn't working during the day. I see no problem with this.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, if it's simply a bus that gets them from point A to point B, I mean, maybe kids are more worldly these days and can figure out what all the accoutrements are for and everything. I'm not sure I would have known when I was 15 or 16 sitting on the bus, you know?
I think if there was a pole and there were neon lights flashing around at Pat, you would have probably...
They're a little more.
I don't think we
want to
dive into the mind of 16-year-old Pat Forty right now, but I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt there.
I'm going to give the people at the Brook Charter School the street smarts to know what the hell there was going on this bus. Anyway, keep us posted. Brook Charter School, keep us.
I think
posted.
Brook Charter School is an Eastie.
Could be. Yeah, I think they know what the pole is for. They know what the pole is for over in East Boston. I mean, look, so also regular listeners, I think they know we like to steer clear of politics on this podcast, mainly because political discussions are stupid and we have important things to detail, like chicken sandwich wars that really impact the people.
That's right.
But sometimes the real world infringes and silence is just not an option when there are threats to the very fabric of democracy. Such as the recent controversy, the stop the steal of the election for homecoming queen at the University of Alabama. That's right. It's a doozy down there in Tuscaloosa.
Did you see the voter turnout?
Oh, the voter turnout was incredible.
13,000 of 31,000 Alabama students voted. 42% voter participation.
Can you imagine getting 42% turnout from age 18 to 22 of that demographic for anything that actually mattered?
Be great. This country would be governed much differently. Yeah, you could. Yeah. They literally have like candidates out there that are like, I am in favor of free college, and you can't get 42% of the college students to vote for them. Okay. I will pay all of your student loans and take all of your debt away. Just can't really get to it. But homecoming queen, like, you would think that platform would interest a college student. Anyway, you might think the Alabama homecoming queen election is not that important, or it's just a battle between two tall, photogenic blondes. Well, in this case, you'd be correct. But there is a pall cast over it. And these are real names. It was a real battle between these two. McLean Moore, that is the most Alabama name you could possibly come up with.
Extremely sorority, yeah.
McLean Moore defeated Montana Fouts in quite a battle.
She was the softball player.
Yes, the softball star is, Montana Fouts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess she's not past tense.
So here's the controversy. First off, apparently cheating in the Alabama homecoming queen election is so rampant that they have numerous rules that are often violated, and points are assigned to each violation. And you're only allowed to rack up 12 points. So you can cheat.
Is there a committee on infractions?
There is. There literally is. This story is incredible.
It is unbelievable.
It has a gray area to cheat. Shocking.
The Crimson White. You're allowed 12 infraction points. If you surpass the 12, you can still be, you can no longer be crowned queen, but before that, so you can cheat, just don't cheat too much.
I mean, it's the SEC way, right? Like,
it really is. Just right. Means more.
Yeah, you can cheat. You just don't quite get to the desk. Don't get to the Hugh Freeze stage. That's it. Yeah.
Yes.
That's
it.
So, she blew past the 12. She annihilated the 12. Somehow she won. She just claimed victory. She only got 47% of the votes. You're supposed to get 50 plus one. There should have been a runoff, but she took the crown anyway. Grabbed it like the bouquet toss by a bridesmaid at a Nashville wedding. Like, she just took it. She's taking this thing. I am going to be the homecoming queen. But she violated numerous things. And the best is that she did not report total expenditures or where her donations and in-kind donations came from. There's dark money in this race. And her campaign videos were like, so they're on her Instagram page, which is now private, which is probably a good idea. This thing was like, they could have run it in the last, this could have been a Trump or Biden commercial. She's like walking campus. talking to different groups, and you're like, there's no way you're talking to that dude. Any other, I mean, maybe there is. She's like working with the big brothers, big sisters. And then there's Montana Fouts, who's her campaign video is basically a guy with an iPhone and she's just striking dudes out. That was her whole thing. And it was like, I like it.
She was supposed
to crush it with NIL money, right? Like she's the softball player.
Yeah. She's done quite well with NIL stuff. Yeah.
She's like a Jenny Finch of this generation ish, right?
Cameo.
Or maybe her campaign was on self-funded. Self-funded campaign. I don't know. Anyway, this is the I guess we'll people's court this, Pat, because this is a big deal.
Big deal.
You know, these elections now all end up in the courts. Should there be a revote? Or did McLean Moore just basically exploit this shaky rule book that they have down there at the Alabama homecoming? And does she deserve it?
What they should do is detonate the rule book in a ceremony at midnight at Bryant Denny Stadium. Since we have why do we have a rule book with all these regulations for an Alabama homecoming queen election? Who cares? Cheat as much as you want. Who cares? But only it's Alabama and it's, you know, the SEC. So homecoming means it's a big deal. But I mean, this to me just cracks me up that and why do you need campaign contributions? What are you doing with the money? It's like, well, I need a crimson cocktail dress for the, you know, to for the when they walk all the candidates out on the field. I mean, what? I don't understand.
Naive, Pat. You're naive. Naive.
The last time you sounded this misguided about Alabama was when you chose Miami to cover in the opener, okay? There's a reason why there are so many rules in the Alabama Homecoming Queen contest, because cheating is rampant. It's just like there's the NCAA rulebook. Everyone complains it's so thick. It's,
let them cheat,
those
then.
Guys have cheated for generations. There is cheating because there is an Alabama Homecoming Queen on the line. They need the rules. They need it. And that is why they're in there, because there is just this goes back to Joe Namath's gal was cheating when she was trying to be the homecoming queen. All right. So please don't underestimate the viciousness of the Alabama homecoming queen race. All right. I find it appalling that you don't think there should be rules. There should be more. Rules.
I deregulate the homecoming race. That's what I'm saying.
Failure. Her financial disclosure forms were a mess. She was reporting she had zero in expenditures, but at the same time, she had personalized signs and buttons all over campus and a car painting event at the parking lot across from the Calvary Baptist Church. That ain't cheap.
She got a super pack of dirty money from Rib Shacks.
She got extra points. So her initial form said she had zero in contribution and expenditures on October 4th. Then she came back and modified after the deadline to report 226 in expenditures out of 350 in donations she attributed to herself. But modifying the form after the cover-up is worse than the crime. You get 6 more points for that. She was scoring Mac Jones to Devontae Smith. I mean, this woman is... It's the most Alabama thing ever. She should win.
Howard Hunt, Gordon Liddy involved here, breaking into the Alabama election offices to cook the books. What in the hell?
Imagine how dirty the Auburn homecoming queen race is if Alabama wins this bad.
Mississippi State's like, hold on now.
Yeah. Hold your cowbell.
Tennessee, they throw stuff at the homecoming queen if they don't like her.
That's true.
Good God, Bond,
but
Shonik,
Sully would
King.
Come on the podcast and argue that she deserved it.
Yeah.
This thing is sponsored by Bond, Shonik, and King, the homecoming queen race. Anyway, it is. This thing is as nasty as you would expect it would be down there.
What about, is it Whitefoot in Birmingham, the other one who...
Lightfoot.
You know, I let's end on a positive, okay? Because if there's two things that we really cherish around here, it's romance and fast food.
Okay.
And I've got the story that hits us right in the heart, while being heart healthy, if you want. We have a Subway marriage, a Subway sandwich shop marriage.
What?
Julie Bouchart and Zach Williams got married Friday. And between after the church and before the reception, they made sure to visit the Livonia, Michigan Subway franchise that they first met.
Mm. Oh.
Romance and the Smell of Break.
Three, two, one.
Romance and the Smell of Bad Jokes.
The smell of baked bread and romance was in the air, apparently. So let me break this down for you, because this guy, Zach Williams, you got to tip your cap to this guy. Talk about making no effort at all and it all turning out good for him. A couple of years ago, he shows up at the Subway at the 30979 Five Mile Road, if you want to stop by. I'm sure they're good.
Now a famed Subway location.
Stops up for lunch to order an Italian BMT. He's in line, and behind him, Julie Bouchard and her mom get in the line. Julie's there for a ham and cheese. And in the line, Julie's mom notices Zach and decides that he looks good. We walked in, and standing in front of us is this good-looking guy. Mom starts nudging me uncontrollably as I try not to giggle. This never happens to me when I'm at Subway either. My mom says to me, "You're giving him your number." Anyone who knows me knows I'm way too shy for that. I said, "You give him my number." So after Zach eats, seemingly oblivious to this, he leaves, and Julie's mom chases him down in the parking lot, gives him the number, and he calls a half hour later. She calls him the wing mom.
Matchmaker Subway mom. That's quite a role.
And they have, at their first anniversary, they return to the Subway. They go on the Subway every year for their anniversary meal. This guy did nothing. Nothing. Goes gets an Italian BMT, and the mom's doing all the work. And then he gets to have cheap anniversary dates for the rest of his life.
He's the big winner here for sure. I mean, this is, you just keep shelling out the, what is it up there, like $6.99 for a foot-long combo or something? I don't know. See, but
$5 foot-long, Pat, $5.
Yeah.
Is it still $5 foot-long?
I don't know.
Pat's like, I haven't been to Subway in years, but I doubt it. I have like the vague recollection of a $5 foot-long jingle in my head.
Oh, yeah, no, I can hear it. I can recite it, but there's no need for that.
I'm on the not.com page of theirs. He did not pop the question at the Subway. They did
go by toaster?
I do have the registry too. Yes.
Okay.
Any toasters?
There is not. I was looking. I don't know what their problem is with that. They're looking for Cole and Mason Forest Wood Pepper and Salt Shaker, outdoor patio wicker chair, 3-piece king quilt set. If anyone wants to chip in, you also get them a Subway gift card, I'm guessing.
Eat fresh.
Fratello outdoor pizza oven.
Oh, no, I could go with that. Item. Yeah. How much is that?
$4.99.
Okay. I'm buying that for myself, for them.
Yeah. We were divided over the pizza stone on our registry because Kate likes pizza, but we don't eat pizza. So I was like, why do we need a pizza stone? I felt like that was, to me, became the symbol of like the over registering. It's like, we're not going to use this stuff.
See, Pete, if there is like a deluxe acai bowl assembly kit, you could definitely do with one of those.
That would be talking.
Things are in the romance department are not going your way. You never know. You just go grab some lunch, and next thing you know, someone's mom is chasing you down the parking lot. So it can happen.
Matchmaker mom from Subway. Yep, I love it.
The wing mom. All right. We'll be back later in the week with our picks, the race for the case. A banger of a week last week. I'm white hot.
We could have an emergency pod if this Alabama homecoming thing goes off the rails. So be ready.
Stay tuned, everyone. Be ready.
It's who knows? Who knows? I mean, arms may be taken up. It's good to get hairspray.
Could have an insurrection.
Could be. Anything's possible. I think Coach Saban needs to monitor this situation. He needs to hire an assistant in charge of monitoring the homecoming.
Probably have an analyst that keeps their eye on.
You know? Yeah, I don't know who he thinks should won. I want that asked.
Butch Jones is already gone.
Who won?
Sully.
Is it Montana Fouts or McLean Moore? How do you claim the election when you only got 47% of the vote? Anyway. I think this pod needs to end. Subscribe. We'll talk to you later. Whatever.